Hey, everybody, what's going on? Rob Cicerino here with some more bonus coverage of Survivor. And actually, today we are going to take a little bit of a step away from talking about this season of Survivor San Juan del Sur to bring in the curator of the Survivor Hall of Fame, Gordon Holmes, to talk about the big Survivor Hall of Fame vote, which is going on this week, where three tribal councils will be inducted into the Survivor Hall of Fame. So we'll talk with Gordon about why he decided to make that decision, why he made that call, and also the 16 different tribal councils that are up for induction in the Survivor Hall of Fame. So that's what's coming up on today's show. Yesterday, I spoke with Miss Survivor, Andrea Belke, on another bonus Survivor podcast. Very, very fun spot there for Andrea. I liked being able to talk with her and not having to be beholden to only talking about the last episode. That was a very fun spot with Andrea. So good job by Miss Survivor. And of course, there's still time left if you haven't gotten through that 4-hour Tyson cast, the longest podcast in the history of Rob as a podcast from last week. That's still up with time to spare before Wednesday night's Survivor Know-It-Alls. Of course, Stephen Fishback and I will be live 9:15 p.m. after the final Wednesday night regular episode of Survivor. And then on Thursday, I'll talk to the next person kicked off. And also, Spencer Bledsoe makes his first recap podcast appearance on Rob Has a Podcast. So it's going to be very, very fun. Make sure you subscribe to Rob Has a Podcast. RobHasAWebsite.com/iTunes. Before we get to Gordon, I want to take a moment and thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast. Those are our friends over at Bombas Socks. Bombas Socks, they're a new sponsor, but they're doing something that is really nice, especially at this time of year. Bombas Socks make athletic leisure socks, which are engineered to look better, feel better, and perform better, but they've got a mission to help those who are in need, because socks, as it turns out, S-O-C-K-S, are the number one most requested clothing item at homeless shelters, and Bombas was founded to address that problem by donating one pair of socks for every sock purchased, because they knew in order to donate more pairs of socks, they'd have to design a better sock than anything else on the market. They spent 2 years on research and development to create seven substantial updates to the standard athletic sock, including a tab to prevent blisters, an extra comfort footbed, honeycomb arch support, and the absence of toe seams. And they were actually on Shark Tank. I know we have a lot of Shark Tank fans. You could see their episode of Shark Tank if you search that on the interwebs. Also, since launching in 2013, they donated more than 150,000 pairs. They make great stocking stuffers for the holiday season for everybody on your list with feet. So get 20% off your first order. Go to bombas.com/RHAP. That's BOMBAS.com/RHAP before December 19th at noon. That's bombas.com/RHAP. All right, everybody. I think this is an annual tradition around this time of year that we talk with this man from Xfinity TV. He's the curator of the Survivor Hall of Fame. Please welcome back to Rob's podcast in God knows how many appearances this is. Closing in on double digits, Mr. Gordon Holmes.
So what do I get? Do I get a t-shirt? Do I get a little trophy? Do I get a coffee mug? What do the 10-timer clubs get?
You get the RHAP water bottle.
All right.
Yes. So canteen.
I'll take it.
Metallic canteen. So Gordon Holmes, now I think it's been not since Unsolved Mysteries. I don't have the music queued up.
How are we going to do this?
Yes, but that was a very fun podcast over the summer. Very excited to have you back on. This is your time of year.
Yes, it is.
You're Mr. December.
It's my time to shine.
Yeah. So the Survivor Hall of Fame is back with a new twist, a new wrinkle. We'll get to that and talk about the voting, which is now open, and we'll talk about all that stuff. But Gordon, I feel like this fall you are in a boat with, I feel like, only a few other people that are covering the trifecta. Is that correct?
I'm on a boat.
Yes, you're with pretty much with me and Jeff Schroeder, right?
Yeah, the CBS trifecta, the hat trick.
Does Jeff Schroeder cover The Amazing Race?
I don't know, but when I actually did the first interview with him after he took over the Survivor Live gig, and I thought the impression was that eventually CBS, he was going to take over like the hub of the CBS reality TV world.
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure if they're doing that. But anyway, so he's not quite there. I think it's me and you. I think we're the only people on this ship.
I'm okay with that.
So no disrespect to anybody else that's covering all three of the CBS right. reality shows. So now I know in the summer you started talking about Big Brother. You were confused. Had you been watching Amazing Race previous to this, covering it fall?
I had been an Amazing Race fan for quite some time. So when they it's one of the few shows me and my girlfriend actually watched together. So when CBS came to me, asked if I wanted to do it, I thought it'd be fun. I got to admit, it's different though. It's really, you know, you get to the Survivor exit interview and you're like, you made this strategic decision and you did this and you stabbed this person in the back or this person stabbed you in the back. Whereas with Amazing Race, they all pretty much have the same goal, is to get to the end fast. So right. there isn't as much strategy involved. I don't think so. The interviews are different, but I'm enjoying it so far. I've really, really been having a good time.
And the word is you even got to interview Whitney and Keith.
Yes, I did.
So how about that? That's amazing.
Yeah, and I had to cut out all the time we were talking about you.
Wow.
No, I met those two crazy kids on a beach in Samoa before they fell in love. So I feel a close personal connection with them. So it was good to talk to them.
Yeah. And you were out there before this season as well?
No, I was not out at season 29, and I can't talk about where I was in August.
Okay, good. All right, good. Eventually we will get to that, and that'll be a lot of fun. All right. So let's talk about the Survivor Hall of Fame, which is back, what, in its fifth year of the Survivor Hall of Fame. So a Survivor Hall of Fame and Rob as a podcast are right on the same trajectory.
And the same boat.
The same boat also. So year five of the Survivor Hall of Fame. And now this year, the Survivor Hall of Fame does something different, where in its first 4 years, you guys inducted players. This season or this year, you chose to take the Survivor Hall of Fame in a different direction and are inducting tribal councils, the top tribal councils of all time, into the Survivor Hall of Fame. And it's been a controversial decision.
Yes.
All right. So talk us through, how did we get from players to tribal councils?
Well, the Survivor Hall of Fame process is really involved in order to, with all the voters and all every facet of it, is quite an undertaking time wise. And I just knew, without getting into too much detail, due to some personal family issues, with my father, that I just wasn't going to have the time to dedicate to it, this year. So there wasn't going to be a Survivor Hall of Fame at all. We were going to go on hiatus, come back next year, bigger, better, stronger, et cetera. But there was a lot of, a lot of people just wanted to try something different, or try to, if there was a way to pull back on it. And I didn't want to do a full induction half-assed. I wanted to use my entire ass. So I had the idea of, everybody talked about inducting other things. I never wanted it to be like a superlative thing, like best looking or, funniest or things like that. I wanted things that, like a genuine, things to be honored in the game. And I thought about immunity challenges. I thought about tribal councils, and tribal councils felt about right. And in this instance, with the way it's working, is the executive committee is nominating tribals instead of voting for individual ones. So instead of having to, when you compile the votes, there's 300 plus some survivors. So compiling the votes for that is kind of difficult. I don't know if you know this, there's more than one survivor named Rob or Bobby or that. So to decipher those names is kind of difficult. So right now we have a list of, I believe it's 16 nominated tribal councils. So it's really easy to vote for. We have a URL, survivorhalloffame.org. That'll take you to let you know which 16 have been nominated and how to vote for them. So really it was just a matter of, this wasn't a good year for me personally, as far as having the time to dedicate to it. But I do love the Survivor Hall of Fame, and I wanted to, it's fun to get to do this with it, but we're going to be back bigger, better, badder, other adjectives that start with B next year.
Okay, good. All right. So this answers a lot of questions, because I had thought that maybe you were unhappy with the people inducted last year, or the executive committee was like, I think it was one thing when the Rob That Sucks got in, and now that we got in blank, now it's gone. This is a bridge too far. We've got to wait a year before we put new people in, because now we're starting to lower the quality of people in the Survivor Hall of Fame.
I've heard that argument, but then at the same time, I think people like Rupert, I think people like Colby, I think people like Jerry, those people seem like, you know, if their names end up on a ballot, who's going to complain? You know, those people are Survivor icons. So that didn't really have anything to do with it. It's nice, though. It's nice. It'll give us a chance to reload. And then, you know, when we start off next year, there will be, you know, those names and whichever new names, you know, leap to the forefront the time being.
Should there need to be a quorum or like on the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame? Like they might have a year where nobody got in. Nobody got a high enough percentage of the vote to be able to do it. Like maybe should there be like, you know, the executive committee like puts out the people who are like eligible this year, and then the fans have to get like a thumbs up or thumbs down vote, and they have to get like 70% of the vote.
Okay, so you're talking about something similar to what we're doing now. So the executive committee would nominate people.
Yes, I think I like this format better. This could be a banner year for the Survivor Hall of Fame.
Okay, and then we have that list of names, and the voters can vote for X amount of people, and if they receive over a certain percentage of the votes, they're inducted into the Survivor Hall of Fame.
Yes.
Interesting.
So with the tribal councils, do you have a set number of this is how many tribal councils are going to be inducted no matter what?
Yes, the top three tribes.
Okay, so the top three will be inducted. My proposal would be that, you know, that you might have a year where you know, nine survivors get into the Hall of Fame. Every year you have none, but it's you have to get 70% or whatever it is. That's how we decide the vote.
This is interesting because then it narrows down on the point of having to, you know, I have people that help me count the votes, and not all of them are Survivor fans. So when they'll see a single first name and not know what to do with it.
I got in?
No, not at all. Because Rob Mariano, the Rob that is sucks less, he is already in the Hall of Fame.
Yes. Okay. So, but what if people were confused?
I'm kidding. Neither Rob sucks at all. Fantastic Robs. I'm sorry. What was the question?
Yes. Then you could sort of like guard against like maybe like some sort of like where somebody is just like gets on social media and telling people nominate me, you know, mm-hmm. They'd have to get a certain percentage of the, you know, of the yes vote.
Yes. It would require them getting a nomination from a member of the committee as well as a certain percentage of the fan vote.
Yes.
Which the nominating committee would keep out. And I always use Wanda, poor Wanda, as an example. You know, she was in half of an episode. So that would keep someone like that out. That was like a joke.
A two-step process.
Right.
Okay.
I like this, Rob.
All right. So do you have the list of the tribal councils nominated?
I do.
Okay. Do you mind going through the list real quick so we could talk about what's on the table to vote for?
Not one bit.
Okay.
So there, like I said, there are 16 tribal councils. I will read them in order.
All right. Actually, do you want to talk about each one for a moment and then give us the next one?
Sure.
Okay. Rather than run through the whole list. All right. So what's the first one that's up for debate this year?
Okay. The first one, probably the most nominated title from Survivor Borneo, the final tribal council where Sue Hawk gave her infamous rats and snakes speech.
Yes. This was on my ballot.
This was on my ballot as well.
Yes. I know you don't want to color the voters, but I feel like you cannot have a Survivor Tribal Council Hall of Fame and not have this, which I believe to be the most iconic moment in the history of the show.
Right. People like you, people like Dalton Ross, you knew that certain things were going to get nominated no matter what. So you kind of went outside the box. I was the same way. I did two that I didn't think were going to be nominated, and then I did Survivor Borneo. I'm so that like it's just I can't emphasize enough that this should be on the first ballot of the Survivor Hall of Fame. It's just it that whole season is iconic, and that moment is like for most people is like the trademark moment. Rats and snakes got to be there.
Yeah, it has to be there. I mean, it was not just I wrote this in my blurb that I wrote. It was like a transcendent moment, not for Survivor, but for television. You know,
yes.
It really was. Oh my God. I mean, it's a night where 50 million people are watching the show and you tune in to see this, you know, truck driver from, you know, God knows where. And she's like going on and you've never heard a speech like this in your life.
Yeah. I would assume that Rap Nation, you know, everybody listens to this. Is that a thing, Rap Nation?
Well, we go with Rob Has a Planet.
Rob Has a Planet. Okay,
we're international, Gordon.
Rob International. I would assume at some point everybody who listens to this podcast has heard, oh, that show's still on? I used to watch the first two seasons. Those people who watch those first two seasons who don't realize that, you know, Survivor has been a, you know, a top whatever show for the past 10 years knows the Sue Hawk speech.
Yeah.
So it's iconic. It's got to be there, in my opinion.
You know what I think is the funniest thing about that, or one of the funniest things about that? Like, do you even remember, like, what did Kelly even do to Sue that made her that mad?
Wasn't it?
Like, it's so, like, nebulous. It's like, wait, she's like, she felt like she was wishy-washy. And
yeah. Well, like, back in the day, you know, Richard Hatch was the TV's worst villain. And all he did was, you know, start an alliance, which now is such a vital part of the game that it's silly that he's even considered a villain.
Yeah. And he was sort of cocky about it and stuff like that. So he was like, you could see why people didn't care for him in 2000. But
right.
You know, I recently watched the first season of Survivor over the summer. And, you know, it really is like, it's kind of confusing what Kelly and Sue are even fighting about.
Yeah, it was just a matter of like, I think they swore some kind of friendship bond out there. And then, you know, Kelly was braiding someone else's hair and that was it.
Yeah. So, and the things that people get into huge fights about in Survivor 1.
Yep.
But fantastic. Love the snakes and the rats speech. It's one of my favorite TV things I've ever seen in my entire life.
I agree.
Okay. What else is nominated this year?
All right. Number two from Survivor, the Australian Outback.
These are in chronological order?
These are in chronological order.
Okay.
We have the episode 7 Tribal Council where Jeff Varner was screwed because the old tiebreaker used to involve who had votes cast for them previously. And Jeff Varner had a vote cast for him, and a tie vote sent him home.
Okay, this was also on my ballot. Did anybody else nominate this?
I don't believe so.
Okay, so I'm out on a limb on this one. Again, I saw a lot of people say, why didn't we nominate Gretchen getting kicked off in the first Survivor? And I feel like that's a fair one. I remember watching that moment on my TV, first vote after the merge, and it was like, oh my God, they voted out Gretchen. I can't believe it. And I felt like, oh my God, how could they do this? How could they vote her out? She was the best one. And that was like when you really realize, like, oh my God, the alliance. That was a big one, but I felt like to nominate two from the first season, I didn't want to, you know, use up my whole three on the first season. Or
right.
Two out of my first three on the first season. All right. Jeff Varner, same thing after the merge. This was, you know, a big vote. You didn't know what was going to happen. You knew it was coming in 5-5. And it was such a big swing also because Ogacor was the tribe that sucked for most of the first half of the Survivor of the Australian Outback. And I was an Ogacor guy, Gordon.
Mm-hmm.
I liked Ogacor. And so, but I like Jeff Varner too. So I was more of
a Kucha guy because I was a Michael Scoopin guy.
Oh, Mike Scoopin guy. Yes.
Yep.
Well, obviously, you know, you do your research and what's going on with Survivor of the Australian Outback. And so we get to this big vote and we have, it comes up with a tie and how's it going to work out? But Jeff Varner had a vote cast against him by Deb Eaton of all people. And then Kimmy Kappenberg blabbed about it to Tina.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's weird. It's weird. It's kind of a, you know, such an odd rule. But I guess in hindsight, I don't know. I'm not sure if the Purple Rock's better. I'm not sure if it's better strategy or it's more interesting that Kimmy spilled the beans. But really, like, interesting choice.
Both are interesting. I think where it gets tricky is that sometimes you don't know who cast the, you know, how many votes you have against you. It's also like then you start getting into like modern day Survivor where it's like, all right, Philip, how many votes have you had cast against you in previous? I've had 17 votes cast against me. All right, Laura Moret, how many votes have you cast? Like, was that before I went to Redemption Island or after I went to Redemption Island? You know?
There's so much advanced strategy these days. It would be a situation where if I knew there was a unanimous vote and I was safe, maybe I'm going to throw a vote. Excuse me. I'm going to throw a vote to someone who I think might be trouble down the line.
Yeah.
Just to start building up their tie break.
Yeah. No, I think it became interesting in Survivor Africa where you have people like Silas, like, hey, we all know that, we all know that Linda is getting voted out tonight. So could you guys all cast your votes for Lindsay, because she already got votes against her, and then that, you know, don't mess up another one of us. And you know, you had stuff that like that, which was interesting. And Lex is getting so pissed off because he has a vote cast against him. Now somebody casts a vote against you, it's like, you know, no big deal. But I do think there was something interesting. I don't know which is better, the Draw the Purple Rock or the previous votes.
Yeah, I guess if you're Baylor and you're going into a merge and you've got like 40 votes against you and you're still there, like that's a real cause for concern.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll tell you what's not good, though, when the previous votes comes down to then, all right, nobody has any previous votes. Let's take a quiz now. That's where I'm out on previous votes.
They can't do rock, paper, scissors or odds, evens.
Yeah. All right. We're going to give you guys a quiz about the world you've been living in. So, yeah, the Jeff Varner thing was really huge. I think Jeff Varner got screwed, and he was a really, really great underrated player.
And, you know, even if this doesn't end up doing well in this poll, like, it's awesome to draw attention to it, because that was, you know, like, maybe a forgotten moment that was really, at the time, was pretty huge.
Yeah, it was huge, and Jeff Varner didn't need it, but the Ogacore tribe did. And also, like, they were kind of stupid to put their votes on Colby, because that's where they ended up going for, instead of, like, Keith and Jerry. And Keith and Jerry had to, like, be on their best behavior and not pretend. Actually, Keith won immunity at that tribal council, so they couldn't put it on him. But, you know, Jerry had to, like, bite her tongue and, like, be on her best behavior, so nobody knew to put the votes on her.
Right.
So, good stuff. All right, what's number three?
All right, before we get into that, I want to say, you know, there's a lot of concern about a recency bias in the Survivor Hall of Fame. I'm excited to announce that only two tribal councils after Heroes versus Villains were nominated.
Okay. See? Good.
So
good job on the executive committee.
Good job, executive committee. All right, in at number three, we have Survivor Marquesas, the Episode 13 Final Four Tribal Council. And that was the first ever purple rock drawing that doomed Pascal. Is that how you pronounce it?
Pascal, yeah.
Pascal, yes. We have Survivor Marquesas, Episode 13, Final Four Tribal Council, and that is the first purple rock drawing, and that doomed poor Pascal.
Pascal, yeah. And I've basically shot my load with my nominations here, because this was the third of my three nominations. That's
See, it. In your defense, though, a lot of people went with that Borneo one. So it's good. You're enlightening people that might be newer to the game.
Yeah, trying to bring people up to speed. It's also hard for me to judge things after I was on the show. So I looked at it from when I was before I was on the show, and just from the perspective of somebody watching at home. But yeah, the Pascal purple rock thing was so huge, because we had votes before. We even had a 2-2 split in the first tribal or in the first season of Survivor, where Sue and Rich both ended up having two votes, but Kelly ended up changing her vote, and we don't know how that would have worked out if Kelly would have stayed with voting for Rich. She ends up switching and voting to Sue. I guess that's what really drove Sue crazy. But the fight that led to that fight is what is, I think, a little bit murky. But that being said, we had this situation where it was Vesepia had won immunity. They did the Fallen Comrades thing, and Kathy was going to get voted out. And she says to Vesepia, like, hey, V, vote with me. Whatever the challenge is, I'll do it. And whatever the heat is, I think she said. And then they had to go into this purple rock situation. And Pascal and Aaliyah are like, I'll never vote against you, Pappy. I'll never vote against you, Sweet Pea. And they had to pull the rocks. And then Pascal got the purple rock.
Your Pascal impersonation is is flawless. Yeah, and it set a really great precedence where everybody's scared to death of purple rocks. I'm trying to think. Not until Tyson was like, yeah, if the math makes sense, do it. Was anybody willing to like, pull rocks if they didn't have to?
Well, the specter of this, though, I think it's the lasting impact of everybody's like, no, I don't want to lose on a rock. So people end up making decisions. I mean, if it wasn't for the purple rock, you wouldn't have Cochran flipping. You wouldn't have John Fincher flipping. There's all sorts of these other scenarios where it's going to be a 3-3 tie or a 4-4 tie. And you have somebody just switching, because it's like a game of chicken. It's like you have both sides like careening into one another, 100 miles an hour. Somebody's going to pull that ripcord and change their vote so they don't have to ultimately pick a rock.
Right. I can make myself safe right now by just changing a vote, and it might screw up my game, but I'm here another 3 days.
Yeah, so it became a deterrent against future ties, which I think is the most interesting effect of it. I mean, there wasn't another rock draw for 23 seasons.
Yep. Awesome.
Very, very excited. Okay. All right, so now I'm out. I'm in the clubhouse with my nominations.
You're on the jury.
Yes.
All right, so number four, from Survivor Pearl Island, we have the Episode 7 Tribal Council, where Austin became Survivor's first ever quitter, and Jeff Probst was so hurt. I've never seen him in such a state.
Very upset.
Oh, I thought he was going to strangle him with his bare hands. Probst was so furious. And amazing that it took Pearl Island 7 seasons in, so it just... mind-blowing that we have quitters every season nowadays, it seems like. And we have medical evacs every season nowadays, it seems like. And then this was the first person who was like, nope, no good, can't do it.
I'm interested. Can you tell me who nominated this? Is this or is that behind the velvet rope of the Survivor Hall of Fame?
I believe it was Tom Santilli.
Okay.
I was member of the press contingency.
Yes, yes, the great Tom Santilli. And so interesting. I don't know how I feel about voting for the first quit vote, but I do think it was a big deal because before then there were people who wanted to quit Survivor, but nobody really knew that they were allowed to. I think you were like, for instance, like in Survivor of the Amazon, Shauna wants to quit Survivor. And she's like, well, could you guys all vote me out tonight? Because I don't want to be here anymore. And the other people were like, no, we're not going to vote you out. But I don't want to be here anymore. But, well, that's tough. You're here. And so there was no quit, you know, no way to quit. And Austin, who I think gets a raw deal, I think that Austin was like, the guy was like naked the entire time. Like he came in with like a suit and like sold his suit on the first day to get more stuff for his tribe. And then realized like, oh man, it's really cold here. And I'm just in my underwear. And so I think he was like, they say he like had like staph infection or something like that. So he really wasn't doing well, but because he was such a big guy that everybody was like, look at this big wuss that he's out there. He's like, he's one of these like, you know, looks like Tarzan, plays like Jane type of things where, you know, he's like, you know, the biggest guy. And you had Skinny Ryan, like I'd love to be out there, you know? And so it was like an embarrassing thing for Austin. And then Jeff Torch, like with such disdain, he was like, go home, Austin. And he threw his torch on the ground.
But you could argue that this is the opposite of the Purple Rock. Like the Purple Rock made the game better because people were afraid to, yeah, you know, to do that. Whereas Austin kind of opened the door that you can quit it. You know, you're going to get grief over it. But that's a possibility if you're not doing well out there, which it's always deflating. It's always, you know, no one's high fiving after a quit. It brings down the spirit of the game. It's an important tribal council. I wouldn't list it as one of my favorites, but there it is.
Yeah, and now, I mean, what a difference from Jeff Probst throwing your torch on the ground with disdain of, you know, go home, Austin. Now it's like, okay, let me call a boat for you. Hold on, let me just sit right there. Let me get the boat in here for you. They'll take you away. They'll take you wherever you want to go. So, all right, thank you so much for playing the game. And now it's a much different experience on the way out for the quitter.
Yeah. Oh, truly, this sucks, but it's cool. I brought you some Lunchables.
Yeah. Hey, Brandon, can I get you a massage?
Here's a Capri Sun. Yeah. It's unfortunate, but it is important.
Yes. All right. What was next?
Number five from Survivor Cook Islands. We have the episode
big
two
jump.
Tribal Council. A big jump from Pearl Islands to Cook Islands. That's a major jump.
Yes. Okay.
Okay. So it is the episode two Tribal Council, and I just have written Billy Loves Candace.
Yes. That is a good one. Can we talk about there were some snubs along the way? Nothing
yes.
from Survivor All Stars?
What would you have included from All Stars?
I'm trying to think of big tribal councils from Survivor All Stars, and
my favorite All Star moment is always going to be Boston Rob saving.
And that wasn't so much a tribal council. I think if you were going to do
right,
a tribal council, I think maybe it's the tribal council where Lex does go home and he's like, and it's just like raining on him and he looks like pretty miserable. I guess there's not really a snub there.
Yeah. There's not like a trademark, like signature moment.
I would say that maybe the best tribal council from the All-Stars might be Richard Hatch gets voted out. I've been bamboozled.
Right. That's
but
a
again,
good line.
That's a great one. I think that the one that did get snubbed, which I thought about putting on mine is, I don't know how familiar you are with Survivor Guatemala, but I watched it recently and there is a tribal council where Judd is one of the greatest Survivor players and Survivor players as a character. And there's a tribal council. It's actually an episode with a double tribal council. And he ends up, he wants Margaret to get voted out. There's a woman named Margaret and he's fighting with her. And like, he's just like shot out of a cannon and Jeff can't even control himself. And there's this big fight that ends up happening where it's like, Jeff, she said, I have ADD. And it's even Jeff at the time is saying, like, I have never seen a tribal council like this. That's a very good, wacky one.
I'll try. All I remember from Survivor Guatemala is the challenge where, was it Rafe was all trying to hang on to some post or something bizarre?
I'm sure something like that happened along the way.
Am I remembering that right?
Yeah, something like that. But yeah, that's a really good one. The Judd, when Margaret gets voted out in Survivor Guatemala. All right, so Billy, we love Candace. And let me just tell you, at Rob is a Podcast, we love Billy also, Gordon.
Right.
Yes.
Well, yeah, it makes sense that Billy would fall in love with Candace, having met her for 30 seconds.
Yeah. And so this is a great moment because it's like sort of like brushed over in the episode when it happens. It's like she's like, you know, well, he says to her, you know, I'm next. And she's like, well, like, we love you. And then he's like, okay, you're like, just like sort of like, you know. Yeah, and he says, I love you, right? And then they go to tribal council, and then they're talking about voting him out, and he's like, well, Jeff, I already got my $1 million prize. And they're like, excuse me? Yeah, like, Candace, we said I love you to each other, and that's better for me than the $1 million. And Jeff, like, almost falls off the seat. He's like, what? I mean, and Jeff is like trying to be like, I mean, I'm not saying it couldn't be possible, but it's like Ozzy, do you think that this is what's going on? Like, Jeff is besides himself.
How would you like to be at that reunion when they finally met up? Because I assume Billy went to Ponderosa and then left before the jury got there, and then Candace was in the jury. So at reunion, hey, remember?
Yeah. I'm sure it was very sweet.
And if he had known that Candace was the prankster that she is, as she showed during the Miss Survivor competition,
yeah,
perhaps he would have been like, oh, maybe she's, what was it, throwing cold water on John in the shower.
That was probably at the reunion when they met up again.
Right.
That was the figurative cold water that was thrown. Yeah. That's a good one. It's a good one. I mean, I think that's more wacky than, you know, something strategic, but... you know, vote how you want.
Okay. All right, number 6 from Survivor Cook Islands. We have the episode 15 Final Four Tribal Council. And this is Dalton's fault. Because Becky and Sundra and the fire-making challenge that never seemed to end.
Yes. That's what his nomination, Dalton Ross?
Yes.
Okay, again, I think that's filed under wacky for me.
Yes.
When these, you know, we're getting down to the Final Four. And this is huge also because it's the first Final Three.
Mm-hmm.
So for the first time, one of these people is going to move on. And you have Becky and Sundra in the fire making challenges, which kind of had been going off without a hitch for the last couple seasons. I think the first one's in Palau between Bobby, John and Stephanie. And then we have a couple of them coming at Final Fours in Palau and then again in Panama. But this one, I think they sort of like steered into the curve of how exasperating this was.
Yeah, it's you know, I'd like to say I think I know which three are going to get picked. The same with the original Survivor Hall of Fame. I had a pretty good guess of who the top five were going to be. Since then, not so much. But that first five, I had a pretty solid
top
pick. Top five. I love that some of these moments are going to get some attention from people who might not know about them, because they're like that like this is a great moment. You know, Billy's moment with Candace, like seeing probes. If I were a new Survivor fan and I saw Austin, how he got kicked out of the game, how he quit the game, compared to how Lindsay was kicked out, how Lindsay left the game, how Julie left the game, it would blow my mind because it's so different from how it's done today.
Yeah, Austin should have just been like, you know, I feel like if I stay in the game, I think I'm going to kill Andrew Savage. So. They're like, okay, well, let's like, hey, and my kids are watching and I want to be a good role model for them. So I have to quit. And then they would have said, all right, well, Austin, you've grown so much.
So people quit because of hunger or, you know, loneliness. And some people quit because of murderous rage. And you've got to embrace that.
Yeah. And, you know, like in the Julie case, Austin, because you know, I miss my girlfriend.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to hang out with her. I have this relationship. We're never apart. We're never apart. We have to be together. Okay. All right. So what's next?
All right. From Survivor Fiji. This is the episode 14, Final Four Tribal Council. It is where Yao Man had won a truck. And during the immunity challenge, he offered to trade Dreams the truck in exchange for immunity. Dreams accepted the deal, took the truck, and then did not give Yao Man immunity, and then promptly voted Yao Man out of the game.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the thing that happened.
I am a big believer in all is fair in love and Survivor. Anything within the rules is perfectly fine with me from a moral standpoint. This is where it gets fuzzy for me. This one has always bothered me. This is the one where it's like, you know, if you trade a reward, it's a meal or it's this, but this is a physical truck with monetary value outside of the game. And ooh, I don't know if I've ever been more upset by Survivor than I was during that tribal council.
Were you okay with Yao Man giving the truck to Dreams?
Yeah, I figured that was okay to me.
Okay. All right. So then you're the part.
Although that if you can't trade, if you and I are the final two and I say, or if you're in the jury, I'd be like, hey, vote for me. I'll give you $50,000 of my prize money. That's, of course, illegal. So I'm also kind of wondering why it was legal in that sense. Maybe, someone from.
Well, in this season, we have people like, oh, well, I want to give my reward to Dreams and stuff like, I think that's kosher.
Right.
Now, the part about Yao Man is like, OK, I'll give you my reward. And then you have to. I think the deal was that you were going to if you win immunity, you were going to give it to me. I think it was.
Right.
Something like that. Either way.
And the shady thing is, it was an endurance immunity, and they were the two people left standing. And Yao Man's like, hey, why don't you drop down? He's like, no, I'll win it, and then I'll give it to you.
Yeah.
And he's like, all right. And I'm like, oh, this might be bad. This is not going well.
Yeah. Basically, the trade was like, you'll let us vote you out when we get the four.
Yeah.
Poor Yao Man. But, lesson learned. And you know what? I think it's probably the one redeeming thing from Fiji that you could say they have that.
Yes.
So, yeah, that's a good moment.
Mm-hmm. All right. From Survivor China, this is number 8. We have the episode 7 tribal council where Jamie Dugan tried to play a fake idol.
Dugan goes down. Nominated for one of the 20 greatest moments in the history of the show, according to CBS and Watch magazine.
I'm sorry, that's not an immunity idol. It was more of an immunity plaque.
Yes, yes. Dugan goes down. So, yeah, that happened.
Now, was that the first fake idol?
I think it might have been.
Because I know Dreams made a fake idol, but I don't know if it ever got played.
Yeah, I think
the first time
the fake idol got played.
Right, okay.
I think, which is going to set the stage for the following season.
Yes.
But all right, so much love for Jamie Dugan. Dugan goes down this month.
Oh, man, and just the way Probst just chucks it into the fire. You know he was loving that.
He loves it. Loves it.
Oh, wait, or was that Randy Bailey? I don't know. I think he chucked it in the fire.
Yeah.
He had to love that.
I think that's always the move.
All right, so number 9. From Survivor Micronesia, fans versus favorites. We actually have back-to-back tribals here. Episode 12, Tribal Council, Amanda plays an idol.
Okay, yeah, so Amanda is, and we don't know as the viewer if she has it or not, correct?
Right, right. Okay. I believe she went to exile, and we didn't get confirmation if she had it or not.
Yes. Can I ask, who nominates that?
Yeah, it was Jesse Jensen, Survivor producer.
Yeah.
But yes, the next one is, of course, the infamous Eric Reichenbach. This was nominated many times. Episode 13, Tribal Council. He gives up his immunity, and then he is promptly voted out. And he could have won, man. If he played that idol, and he was doing so well in the challenges. That whenever they talk about like the dumbest moves in Survivor history, I got to go to what are the odds of them continuing to win after that move? Where Colby, I think if he picks Keith, he wins hands down.
Mm-hmm.
So in my book, that's kind of the dumbest move because, it's possible Eric could have lost immunity. It's possible any number of things could have happened between then and that final tribal council. But, Eric.
Yeah, man, I agree with you. I always look at it like, okay, if you do like go through door number 2 instead of door number 1, what are the chances you were going to win the game? And if like, you look at it like, with the Colby and Tina instance where it's like, okay, if he does, it goes through a different door instead of this one, he, instantly wins the game. I think that's really bad. Except I think that the Survivor Australia people were playing by a different set of rules in that I think that Colby wasn't so much concerned with being the sole survivor and winning $1 million. I think he was like, okay, well, I'm going to be a huge star. I'm going to Hollywood and, I'm going to, have all this notoriety that's going to come out of this because Survivor was such a hit show. Like, I think he didn't want to be seen like negatively so much. So I think it was like, well, people will hate me if I vote out Tina here. If I lose to Tina, so be it. But I'd rather not give Keith the satisfaction. So I feel like there was a little bit more of a method to his madness. Like the woo thing of, hey, I'm going to take Tony instead of Cass, like makes less sense to me.
Okay, that's fair enough. Like, because if you look at it from the sense that, yes, Colby didn't get $1 million, but if he'd come off that season as a heel, you know, he wouldn't get commercials. He wouldn't get his TV shows. He wouldn't. Is it Top Shot? He was the host of.
Yes.
He's done a lot post Survivor, and it's possible that that could have affected all of that.
Yeah. So I feel like that's not totally like the worst, shouldn't be like talked about as like the worst move ever. Like if you go to Palau and we talk about where Ian is up on the thing with Tom. And again, he probably wasn't going to beat Tom, but the idea of that he's going to like completely like quit the game and walk away because he's trying to save his friendship with Katie. That's also up there with not a good move.
Right.
Okay.
You know, because if he had held on a win one and he had taken Katie to final, I'm sure he would have won.
Yeah.
But there is a step between then and the final. So Wu is probably right now, if we're going based on your criteria for the Colby thing, then Wu right now is probably my pick.
Yeah, probably. And there remains to be seen if whether they would have voted for Wu instead of Cass and stuff like that. And you know, I think you probably get like five different versions of that story if you poll the Kagyan cast. But that being said, you know, let's just talk about the Eric thing. I don't think that this is the dumbest thing ever because it's a final. He's at the final five. He's got to still get through final four immunity and final three immunity. And, you know, there's two more chances that, I mean, he's not the greatest challenge player in the history of the show. Like, I think there's a good chance he doesn't win one of those immunities along the way.
Right.
So he's throwing something at the wall, trying to make something happen. Right. He's playing against some of the best players of all time. He's playing against, out of that final four, three of the four people he's playing with are nominated for the 20 best players of all time on the CBS website. So
three of that final four are members of the Survivor Hall of Fame.
Yeah. So we'll give Eric a little bit more credit. And like he's in way over his head. It's day 35, 34 or whatever it is. And, you know, he's still got a lot of daylight in front of him to get to day 39. So it's a great moment, but I won't call Eric the dumbest move ever.
No, I don't think it was the dumbest move at all.
Yeah.
It was up there, but not the dumbest move. All right. So number 11, this is one of my picks. And I'm in a unique situation where, you know, we sent out the call for, you know, send us your picks. And you don't know what, you know, Parvati's doing and Parvati doesn't know what Saria's doing. So most people are just picking their top three. I had the benefit of knowing that, you know, Borneo, Micronesia, heroes, villains, we're all going to be well. They're going to be taken care of. They're going to be there. So I kind of went on a limb with a couple of mine. From Survivor Gabon, this is number 11. It's the episode 9 Tribal Council. And if you're having trouble remembering this one, here's a couple of quotes that were said during the voting process. Payback's a bitch. You are a disgusting, old, hot-headed alcoholic. You need to grow up before you die alone.
Mm-hmm.
This vote is not strategic. It is strictly personal. those are things that were all said before Crystal Cox came up and as loudly as she possibly could railed into Randy Bailey. And I love Randy Bailey. Everybody at Tribal could hear her. And then she finishes off with forget you, go home, bye. And it was just an amazing moment. And that was before Randy Bailey played Bob Crowley's fake idol. Sugar was very amused, rolling around on the ground. Just in my book, just a train wreck of a tribal that doesn't get mentioned as often as it should. So I just wanted to give it a little bit of love.
Yeah, poor Randy.
Poor Randy. And I love Randy, man. He didn't deserve that.
Yeah. Randy did not deserve it. I think Randy would be mad if that won.
Yeah, I don't think it will. But just from the standpoint that whenever we go to visit Survivor on set, we'll attend the first tribal council. And every time there's a new, it's obviously a tribe's first time being there. So when it comes time to vote, Jeff will be like, let me show you how loud you should talk at when you're voting. And he'll go up there and he'll write like, you know, my name or Dalton's name or whatever and be like, this is how loud you should talk at tribal. So people can't hear you. Say what you want to say. Keep it short. Keep it sweet. If you go on too long, or if you're like, let's get pizza, like, we're not going to use it. He's like, did you hear me? And they'll be like, no. And then he'll like say something really loud. So they know, like they absolutely, you know, there's a reason everybody's whispering there. It's because you can hear it. So just for her to go off in that way was just, what a season. Like, it's not a great season, but there are some moments and there were definitely some characters.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a season with, you know, not the greatest strategic season, but with characters.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes. All right. So what is next on the list?
Number 12, we have from Survivor Samoa, the Episode 9 Tribal Council. Russell isn't done playing just yet. Keep hope alive. Russell Hance played an idol. I think it was one of the 40 he had that season. And turned the tide of the game. Man, Russell was just on fire that season.
He was. Which vote was this in Samoa?
Episode 9. Let me.
So who got voted out?
Kelly. Kelly was voted out.
Okay, so Kelly gets voted out. And Russell ends up playing an idol, and he's hanging in there.
Yeah, Kelly Charbonneau.
Keep an eye on this Russell Hance. He's making moves.
Yeah, this guy might be a big deal.
He could win the game.
He's I wouldn't go that far. It's fine. Finding idols like they're going out of style.
Who nominated this? Did Russell nominate this?
No, actually, I didn't get a like. That was part of the taking it easy this season. Is I did not. Like, you know how it's kind of, you have to hunt things down?
Yes.
I wasn't going to hunt things down. I was like, if I don't get anything from you, I don't get anything from you. I'm not going to.
You didn't hunt for ballots with the same zeal that Russell hunted for idols.
I certainly did not. No, it's a situation where, you know, like there's 20 some people that I'm talking to and usually have a chance to chase people down. One of the many reasons it's so time consuming, and that I wasn't prepared to do that. So like the executive committee is not as well represented this year as in years past.
That for you, Gordon, the job that you do should be as easy as going to Exile Island and finding immunity idol.
Exactly.
It should just be you show up. It's like there's a clue. It's right over there and you go pick it up and that's it.
I should reach into a tree.
Yes.
With a bright, shiny arrow pointing at it and a cameraman standing above it.
Yes.
And find me an idol.
Yes. And there should be no fake ballots like what Randy ended up playing.
Precisely.
Yes. What's next after Survivor Samoa?
Okay. From Survivor Heroes versus Villains. It's the episode six. It's episode six's first tribal council. There were two tribal councils this episode. This was the one where Russell played an idol for Parvati without her knowing it. And Tyson was supposed to split the vote, and he didn't because he didn't want to have to go through all the process of the revote. He just wanted hot dogs, and he ended up bounced from the game.
Yeah. Well, it's a great moment. It's a big moment. We've talked about it for years. It's funny, you know, I don't know how many people complain about the hidden immunity idol, but like it seems like every moment that we've talked about since Survivor Cook Islands has involved a immunity idol.
Yeah, it really is. I feel like most of the time, if you watch the show enough and you get a feel for, you know, like if somebody's they're like, we're going to target this person and they say that before the first commercial, that person's probably safe. Whereas when an idol's at play, it just opens up so many new different avenues. It's probably, you know, it adds to the drama. And I'm sure that's why they make them so easy to find these days.
Yeah. And the Reichenbach thing isn't an immunity idol, but it's about an immunity necklace.
Right.
Okay. So let's see. Talking about the Tyson thing. And, you know, it's also even more interesting because then Tyson comes back and ends up winning another season.
Yeah. Like Tyson is really one of my favorite players. Just, he's smart and it's kind of weird that he would get tripped up and something like that. I remember at the time watching it and being like, that's never going to work. What are you doing? But why would they show it? And then it happened. And my mind was absolutely blown.
Yeah. Cause Tyson is a smart strategic player. And if you hear him like tell his side of this story, like it makes sense. And I can't even do the mental gymnastics of like why it made sense at that time. But it wasn't just like he was like being, stupid. He was like trying to make a big move. And, but I think what's great about Tyson and, as demonstrated by my last show with him is that he can really talk about the game, but he does it in a way where, you know, if Tyson came back, I don't think people are like, oh, we got to get rid of Tyson. He's a schemer, but he won the game. But I feel like that if I came back, be like, oh, we got to vote out Rob right away. He's up to something.
I think he's one of those guys where I remember when you did your, one of your Boston Rob casts. You know, it's easy to be like, you know, Boston Rob's a schemer and you know, he's like a street smart kid and blah, blah, because that's what he puts out there. But to hear him talk about the game, it's on such a different level than most people are capable of. And I admit that even some of this stuff was like, once it was spelled out for him, like, wow, that is really impressive. And I think Tyson is capable of that as well. So,
yeah,
it's unfortunate that you know, he kind of got branded with, you know, one of the dumbest move brands for that. But,
it probably helped him in his third time because some people are like, oh, Tyson, he made the dumbest move. And then they didn't think of him as such a strategic threat.
Yeah, I would think coming into, you know, that Blood versus Water with his resume was probably fantastic for him, because he was viewed as someone who was just like, you know, like a slacker and just kind of like sarcastic and kind of a like, but like he's anything but, like he's super intelligent.
Yeah, it's like, oh, watch out for him in the challenges, but he'll, you know, he's, you know, not a good strategist because of this, what, this move from Heroes versus Villains. And it was such a great moment. And it's kind of crazy that was in the first Tribal Council. And then the second Tribal Council is like, in that episode, it's like when James gets voted out. It's like, so it's sort of like, you know, you go from like this high point of the show to like this, you know, they're going to vote James out for his knee is no good.
Yeah, it was pretty anticlimactic to go from that to James going up.
Yeah. Is that when he called Colby Superman in a fat suit?
I don't recall.
Yeah. All right. So what's next? Let's stay in Heroes versus Villains, I suspect.
You're correct, sir. Staying in Heroes versus Villains, we have Episode 10's Tribal Council. That was when Parvati played an idol, and then she played a second idol, protecting both Jerry and Sander from the vote. And that allowed the villains to run the table against the poor heroes.
Yeah, this was amazing. I would have no issue with this getting enshrined. It's fantastic. I mean, I saw Parvati the week, like, that episode aired on a Thursday, and that week that it was on, I saw Parvati like that week, and I was just like, could you just tell me one thing? And this is like, I didn't really know her particularly well at that time. And I was sort of like embarrassed to like ask her like a strategy question. I was just like, how did you know to do what you did? And she was just like, I knew Amanda. Like, I knew she was just trying to trick me and trying to get me to play my idols. I just knew. And so it's just like, she had such a good read on Amanda, but what a ballsy thing to do. Like, I almost feel like I would never be able to, you know, pull the trigger on a move like that.
I just feel like Parvati was so, like, you know, so on the edge the entire time. Like, she could have been the first person out if the villains had lost immunity. The heroes lost that first meeting and Sugar went out. But like, yeah, Parvati just could. There were so many times where it looked like her number was up that like it might have just lended itself to her just being like, you know, screw it. Like, you know, I've almost been out like 40 times before. I've got a good read on this. Let's make something interesting happen. And that's just a fantastic tribal. You know, that easy. Like, if that's one of the three, then you'll get no complaints from me.
Yeah. She's just going to play loosey goosey.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's great. It's a great moment.
Loving that Parvati.
Yeah, she's good.
Yeah. All right.
Watch out for her. She could do big things.
She's troublemaker. She's troublemaker. All right. From number 15, our first year post-Heroes versus Villains Tribal from Survivor Caramel and Fans versus Favorite, we have the Episode 10 Tribal Council. This is the one where Malcolm and the other three amigos were down 7-3, and Malcolm found 40 idols, and he made sure that he gave one to each of the three amigos. Actually, that's not true. I believe one of them actually had a challenge immunity, but he gave one to himself, and then he gave one to Eddie, I believe, and he said, hey guys, we're voting for Phillips. You guys do whatever you want. And all hell broke loose. Everybody started whispering to each other, and I think Brenda was like, we gotta get Andrea, and I think Andrea was like, hell no, let's get and all these names are getting tossed around. Like, it was the, like, I've never seen an alliance have to go through that. Just, they were just shattered. I mean, it was a great move. It didn't work out for him in the end, but it really opened up some cracks. It was like, maybe he could have done better with the two idols for himself, but for his alliance, this was maybe the best move. It really opened up some opportunities, put some cracks in there. Just an awesome tribal council.
Yeah, it was really exciting. It was a big night, and this is a really good one. Ultimately, it doesn't, for me, even though this is a great moment, it doesn't have the weight for that the Parvati thing had, because the Parvati thing, you know, changed the course of the game. Where this was just like delayed the inevitable a week.
Yes.
You know, where ultimately, you know, does Malcolm get voted out the next?
I think Malcolm was out the next week.
I mean, and I love the move when we did it or when it happened. Like, I argued with Steven. I said, I think this is great because now if Eric comes with them, but then Eric really didn't come with them. Eric voted with them in that vote. But I was like, they just need to get one more person on their side. But ultimately, that's just not how it played out. So it ends up being like, you know, one of these things where it's almost like, for me, as a baseball fan, Gordon, and maybe you'll appreciate this. This is almost like the Endy Chavez catch in Game 7 of the 2006 NLCS, where it's a beloved moment for Mets fans, but ultimately one that's in a loss. And it's a great highlight. But in a game seven that ultimately ends up being lost when Aaron Heilman gives up a home run to Yadier Molina. But it's, you know, it's like, hey, but it's a game we lost.
All right, Rob, when are we going to do our 2006 NLCS podcast?
Never.
Never. What?
Never.
Well, Adam Wainwright striking out.
Yeah.
Come on. All right. But here's the thing. It's like, so say Malcolm doesn't do it. Say he saves himself, or he knows Eddie's going, so he lets him vote out Eddie. And then the next week he saves himself. And then maybe the week after that he saves himself because he has the idols. At the time, it just seemed like we're down 7-3. We are screwed. This is our best bet for maybe making some inroads. It didn't work, but again, a great, a standalone, awesome tribal didn't have that much of an impact on the season.
Yeah. I know. You know, you're trying to, you know, catch lightning in a bottle, like what Parvati ultimately ended up doing. You know, I think he probably would have been better off just like, you know, going down to the end with those guys and then, you know, keeping those two idols in his back pocket. And then, you know, hindsight's 20/20. But I think that, you know, if you take a look at like how Terry Dietz got as far as he did with the, you know, all-powerful idol, like it was just like, you know, you get to a point where people are afraid to vote for you because you have those idols on in your pocket. So they got to always just like, you know, and this is, again, Terry Dietz is before the idol flush split. But, you know, then you get people splitting votes to try to get you to flush your idols. You have a better chance to do something.
I it's just how many times can you play the I'm going to play this idol and then not play it? Like, how many times can you do that before?
But also, like, if you're Malcolm, also, you've got a pretty good shot at individual immunity every time out also. So it's like, all right, so can I get to the end of the game without winning? And I get like two strikes also to not win individual immunity, you know, and I'm up against like Cochran and Andrea and Brenda and stuff like that. So it's like, and you know, Eric is good, you know, Eddie and Reynolds, but you know, Malcolm's got a, you know, a fighting shot in just about every individual immunity he goes into.
Right. And I believe at the time they knew he had one idol.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly. So, you know, next vote, say you don't play it, say Eddie goes home, your next vote, you know, Reynolds is I think has worn one more immunity at that point than Malcolm has. No one had seen Survivor Philippines at that point. So maybe Reynolds more of a target if he doesn't win. But then they'd still try to flush that first idol. So maybe it'd be smarter to play that. I don't know. There were options.
It was exciting.
Yes.
It's not our idol. It's not our money. We're happy Malcolm, Mr. Survivor did it.
Mr. Survivor and his championship belt.
Yes. Yes. Okay.
So jealous. All right. The final one. I love championship belts. All right. The final Survivor Hall of Fame nominee, Tribal Councils. Number 16, Survivor Blood versus Water. The episode 12 Tribal Council, where Sierra, Katie, and Tyson pulled rocks. This was the one where Sierra, it seemed like she was locked in Tyson's alliance, and then she was convinced, to pull rocks during the actual tribal. And Tyson was like, let's go for it. And I guess he figured, you know, I got a 66% chance of staying here and keeping my alliance. And that's what happened. Katie got the boot and Tyson went on to win $1 million.
Yeah, it's great. It's another great moment. But for me also with this moment, it comes down to it's another thing like the Andy Chavez where it's a great moment in a losing effort for the, you know, Hayden, Sierras and Katie's of the world.
So going forward, anytime somebody has like a wonderful life-changing moment on Survivor, it's negated by the fact that they don't win.
Yeah, if it doesn't help them get closer to the, you know, to the win. I mean, I think that's a fair statement because it's like how great of a move it is, how great of a tribal council is it if it ultimately doesn't end up being a great moment for Tyson that he went to the rocks. But I feel like we're talking about it like a great moment for like Hayden, like, oh, Sierra, she went to rocks. What a great job. But what'd she come in? Fourth place, fifth place? I mean, she did exactly the same as she was going to.
If anything, I feel bad for Andy Chavez for having to be associated with, you know, good efforts in a failing performance.
Yeah. And I think that there are probably, you know, other great sports moments also where it's like, oh, there was this, you know, amazing, amazing play in a losing effort also.
This is for those of you who aren't familiar with what we're talking about. Andy Chavez made the most amazing catch in baseball history and doubled up a guy off first base from left field. It was I was unhappy. Being a Cardinals fan, I was not happy.
And the Mets had all the momentum coming up in the next inning. I think they loaded the bases also in the next inning.
I know that they had like...
I think they loaded the bases every single inning the entire
game. Yeah, like the ninth inning, they had the bases loaded. And who is it, the card that Wainwright struck out? He played
Beltran,
who used to kill the Cardinals.
He's so good in the playoffs. He's like a clutch.
In the 04 NLCS, he murdered us. So I was not
strike one, heavy. Strike two, strike three, and it's a called strike.
Oh, good times.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Talk about Survivor.
Yeah. Well, Yadier Molina, better hope he's never on Survivor. I will kill him the entire season.
Now, I have a theory that catchers are the athletes best suited to be on Survivor.
Why is that?
Well, you know, because they're used to dealing with pitchers who have like, who are used to being the stars. So, and they're used to suffering. They're used to being uncomfortable. They're obviously good athletes.
Is this the Bull Durham theory?
Yeah, that works. Someone, I forgot who it was, that asked me, like, what athlete do you think is best? I'm like, I think catcher, because, like, catchers are always miserable. They have bad knees.
Yeah.
They're used to pain. They're used to...
Oh, man, I can't wait for the Mike Piazza Survivor era. Wow, fantastic. Who's the catcher that you want to see?
Yadier Molina. I'm going to name my firstborn child Yadier Molina.
Maybe there could be a season of, like, Survivor, something versus Molinas. All Molina brothers.
Because they're going to dominate because they're all catchers. I told you.
Yeah, well, that would be the equalizer. Survivor pitchers versus catchers. You want to see that, Gordon? Can we green light pitchers versus catchers?
That is a hell of a subtitle.
The ratings would be up. All right. And then so, yeah, it's a good moment too. It's exciting. Doesn't end up working out like where it's like they go to rocks and Sierra flips and then Tyson gets voted out there in that spot. I think that's a little bit more, and then on the way for Hayden to win the game, I think that becomes a bigger moment, but still super exciting.
I don't think Jervis was ever going to beat Tyson, but that was just like the cherry on top of Tyson's amazing resume.
Yeah. No, it was great. Again, the ball's on this guy to go to the rocks on this. It's fantastic.
That's awesome. Yeah. I remember going to that season and being like, this is a train wreck. This is going to be terrible. This is a disaster. And then great season.
Great season. Okay. And those are our nominees?
Those are our 16 nominees.
16 nominees. Much like the first Survivor, 16 contenders for the title.
I would say every week we're going to eliminate one, but we don't have that kind of time.
We don't have that kind of time. So how does the voting work? So SurvivorHallOfFame.org.
Yes, go to SurvivorHallOfFame.org. It'll give you the full listing, and then you can either tweet to Survivor or Facebook or email in your votes, and then we are going to honor the first three in the week leading up to the Survivor Blood versus Water 2 finale.
What will you do? Will you have a plaque? Will you talk to the people involved with the tribal councils?
I don't know.
Interview Andy Chavez.
I'll drop Andy. If the Blood versus Water tribal wins, I'll drop Andy Chavez a line.
Yes.
I don't know. Maybe I'll, if there's someone who was a key player, see if we can reach out to them. See what we can do. I don't know what Sue Hawk's up to these days. But,
I don't know what Sue Hawk is up to these days. Yeah, if you get a hold of her, get her number for me.
I'd love to, man. Like I'd like that again. Just so few. Like the word iconic gets thrown around, but truly. Rats versus snakes is an iconic moment.
I mean, I wrote about this in my thing, but I used to like pepper Sue Hawk with questions about that and the first Survivor, and that was very fun for me. But I do think it got on everybody else's nerves on the All Stars. Like the other people, weren't fanboying out about being on the All Stars like I was. The good thing about hanging out with Rudy is that Rudy would tell me the same stories again and either forget that he already told me or just had no problem with telling the same stories again. So that was a better match.
A friend of mine went as Zombie Sue Hawk for Halloween that year.
Yeah.
And he was dressed up like a zombie and he was just like, if you were starving, I would not feed you brains. Yeah. It's just like the dumbest thing, but we all cracked up over it.
Oh, yeah. If you were lying there on the side of the road dying of thirst, I would eat you before the vultures got there. That's good. Gordon, I know you're doing the power rankings with Spencer, mm-hmm. Spencer Bledsoe, who's going to be our guest on Thursday this week on the Survivor podcast. Who's winning, you or Spencer?
It's a blowout, which doesn't happen often, but I have had an inspired season.
Oh, man. Is it mathematical elimination for Spencer? Checkmate?
I'm pretty sure it is. I have had a Dawn Meehan-esque power ranking season. And, you know, Spencer, he is super smart. He knows his Survivor. Just I think I got lucky. Like when Jeremy went, I didn't have him too high up in the rankings, because I base my rankings on who's safest. I don't base it on who I think's going to win. And, you know, when you're in charge of an alliance, you're never really safe. So I had him lower in case something crazy happened, and something crazy happened. So Spencer's a fantastic guy. He's doing like his stuff is so much fun to read. But I just got the better of him.
So what you're saying is
Spencer has zero chance of winning this game.
Yes.
Should have known that pause. So you're saying he can't win? Yeah. You're saying so you're saying there's a chance.
Feel like you have an advantage coming in each season against that? You've done the power rankings, what, like 10 seasons now? And so now
the power rankings, the first season was Survivor Samoa, I believe. Mm-hmm. So it's been, yeah, it's about 10 seasons now.
Yeah. So now, like, you know what the right strategy to play every season. And now a new contender is like walking up, and they almost have very little chance to beat you because you know the right way to like structure the power rankings, right?
See, but I'm more interested in the rankings being interesting than I am in them than winning. So I try to give advice. Like, I say to them, don't rank based on who you think's going to win. You know, rank based on who you think is safest, and things like when there's a tribe swap, usually the tribe that's down in numbers, the other tribe's going to try to take out their big challenge horse. So I try to get my strategies out there because I'm more interested in a fun competitive thing than winning, because I've just won so many times.
Now, Spencer was like a no-brainer to do the power rankings with this season, but do you have your eye on somebody for the next season of the power rankings, for the Survivor 30 power rankings?
Oh, wow. I haven't thought about it. I like enthusiasm. I really like it when someone reaches out to me, which is what Spencer did. He's like, yeah, I got to defend Sierra's
honor. That happened?
Oh, yeah, that happens all the time. Like Malcolm.
No, I mean this season. Has it happened this season?
No. I wonder if it's because they're so being kept quiet on social media or not. I haven't really heard from anybody.
I'm trying to think. If I was you, who would be good? But Jeremy would be good.
Yeah, like who else? Who do you think?
Well, I think Jeremy would be pretty good, but I think that you might get a lot of every week in the power rankings.
These guys are so dumb.
That would be a good one. I bet maybe you get like some sort of tag team, like Reed and Josh.
Reed and Josh would be great. I was thinking Natalie too, because the Twinnies don't hold back with their opinions.
Yeah, but the power rankings is a lot of work, and I don't know if the Twinnies, that seems like their thing to sit down and write a, you know, power rankings after every episode of Survivor.
Well, yeah, but since they're twins, they could do a thing like, you know, tag teams that wore masks used to like switch in and out. Nobody would know about it.
Yeah,
so
I don't know.
Maybe Nadia's doing it 1 week and we don't know.
It's possible. I feel like it's not their thing. I feel like, I feel like the Christie brothers are probably out on this. The Wentworths, I feel like would be good also.
Yeah. So I think there's some options.
Yeah. John and Jacqueline, I don't see them being into it. Baylor and Missy, I don't think they're into it. Who else is there?
Keith, clearly. Keith,
yeah. I don't think he's into it. Keith and Wes together on the power rankings.
There you go.
Yeah. Interesting. Who do you like to win this season?
Wow, man, I thought I had finally broken.
It's pretty wide open, right?
Every season I pick somebody, and every season they lose. That's been like this since the first year I did this in Gabon. I thought I had finally nailed it. I was convinced Jeremy. Once he got rid of Josh, I thought Jeremy was a shoo-in. Just, you know, I'm not a big edit reader, but I mean, it felt right. And then when he went, I was just banging my head against the table. Right now, it's got to be Natalie or John, I'm thinking, because, you know, John, you know, he's not getting like a smart guy edit. It always seems like he's being convinced into doing things. But, you know, he's got an idol, and he's got like it seems like he's close with Missy. I think anybody who gets to the end with Missy and Baylor is a millionaire. But on the same hand, Natalie is the same way, has an idol, close with Missy and Baylor. So I guess it's got to be one of those two.
Are we sleeping on Jacqueline a bit? Is she somebody that could potentially be the winner?
I don't think people like Jacqueline. I think if you get to a final three with her, Missy and Baylor, maybe. But if she goes with anybody else, like you get Wes and Alec And like, you know, I guess it seems like the jury wouldn't be that, like, if Keith is on the jury at that point, I think she has an uphill battle. If she gets there with Missy and Baylor, maybe.
I'm starting to buy that Keith has a shot.
I think if Keith got to the end with the right people, he could win.
Because I feel like the jury is going to be very pro Keith. Like, he's in that nice, like, Danny Boatwright position now where, like, kind of if he gets to the end, it's not going to be because he screwed anybody over. It's going to be because other people are either keeping him around or making questionable decisions. Maybe he might win immunity here or there. But, like, if he can get to the end, I think the jury is very favorable to him.
Well, he's good at challenges, and people like it when it seems like you fought your way to the end.
Yeah,
like you said, Danny Boatwright's probably a perfect comparison.
Yeah. Wow, I bet Danny Boatwright would be pissed to hear we're comparing her to Keith. But he could have a Danny Boatwright type story here.
There you go. That's what I'm sure everybody anticipated that when they cast him.
Yes, like he's like the redneck Danny Boatwright.
You look at that guy; you just see.
Yeah,
Danny Boatwright.
What about Baylor? You think Baylor has a shot?
No, I do a word association with my exit press. And for the first time, somebody said something positive about Baylor. And when I say not negative, it was Alec this week. I think he said young.
Young.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's as close as we're getting to a positive thing anybody has said about Baylor since they've come out of the game. So I can't imagine a situation where Baylor gets to the end. I don't think people respect her. Yeah, I can't see a situation where she could win it. Maybe, okay, if she gets to the end with Missy and Jacqueline, and Missy and Jacqueline go on, like, racist rants at Final Tribal, then maybe.
Oh, my God. Well, that would be the perfect ending to the John Rocker season.
Yeah.
And who are you going to have at the bottom of your power rankings this week?
All right, so let's see who we got left. So,
which is the person you think is most likely to go home?
Well, I mean, it's always a safe bet, like Keith's to have Keith. Yes, have Keith at the bottom. I'm sorry, not Keith. Keith, right?
Yeah, Keith.
Have Keith at the bottom. With this Natalie vote from last week, that, you know, there might be some dissension among the ranks, but, you know, Natalie has an idol, John has an idol, so I'm thinking I'm going to have Keith at the bottom. Maybe, you know, if John wins immunity, then Natalie might feel like she has to vote along with them in order to calm everything down. And I really think Natalie's move is too quick. I think if Natalie gets to the end with anybody, she wins.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody beats her. So rocking the boat just doesn't seem like a great move at this point for her, especially having an idol, so she can protect herself. But yeah. Keith at the bottom.
Were you critical of the Natalie thing this week?
I was. It just seemed too soon. I think, like I said, I think she could beat anybody she gets to the end with, except maybe Keith. So she should have let Baylor talk her into keeping Alec if that was what she was so set against. You know, Keith is like the only person I could see beating her at a final three.
Yeah, I know.
The funny thing is she's like, I want to get out John because he's a fool and because he voted out my boy Jeremy. I love how they say fool.
Yeah.
But Baylor voted out her sister.
Yes, that's true. Yeah, maybe she doesn't know quite how that went down.
Right.
Yeah.
Maybe that's not how you start a relationship. Hey, I voted out your sister.
Yes. It certainly would be a sticky situation. Yes. Yes. Very sticky situation when you vote out somebody's family members.
I love this. It's like a morning radio show.
Not really. All right. Well, Gordon, we're very excited about the Survivor Hall of Fame and the fifth anniversary edition of the Survivor Hall of Fame.
Not unlike Rob Has a Podcast.
Yeah. Well, our official 5-year anniversary will be in February.
Nice.
We started in February 2010 and now February 2015 will be the 5-year anniversary.
I will bake some cupcakes.
Oh, fantastic.
Right?
To commemorate the season which Dawn whooped you in the power rankings.
I don't want to talk about that.
All right. So SurvivorHallOfFame.org is the website. At Survivor Hall is the Twitter.
That's correct.
And of course, at Gordon Holmes is where you can follow the curator of the Survivor Hall of Fame.
That is accurate.
Okay. All right. And you still got what? One more power rankings to go. And then that's, do you do anything at the end of the year to commemorate who won Or
not really. Like, usually it's, I'll just mention it like in the recap, like, hey, congratulations to that. If someone else won, I don't want to draw attention to it. And then when I win, I don't want to seem like I'm bragging. So no, we'll do one this week and then probably do one before the finale just to, you know, put them in the order you think they'll finish.
Okay. All right, Gordon, thank you so much.
Rob, thank you.
All right. All right, everybody, there you have it. That was Gordon Holmes back here on Rob Has a Podcast. We may need to check the record books, but I believe that might have been Gordon Holmes' 10th appearance on Rob Has a Podcast. So very good job by Gordon Holmes once again here. And let's see what you guys come up with in the Survivor Hall of Fame. Looking forward to seeing which three tribal councils get inducted next week in finale week of Survivor. Can't believe that finale week is almost here. I mean, I feel like really it was just a minute ago that we were just kicking off this season, but it was a late start to the season and it's really flown by. And speaking of things that have flown by, the entire year has flown by. I can't believe it's also Christmas time. If you are doing your holiday shopping still, you can go ahead and start your shopping at robhasawebsite.com/Amazon or in Canada, robhasawebsite.com/Amazon.ca. Get great deals all holiday season long on all sorts of things and helping to support Rob Has a Podcast. We greatly appreciate it when you go ahead and use those links. We'll be back on Wednesday night now for our next show for the Survivor Know-It-Alls after the final Wednesday night regular episode of the season. And then we'll get into all the fun on Thursday with the next person kicked off. And Spencer, make sure you don't miss an episode. Subscribe at robhasawebsite.com/iTunes. Looking forward to hearing what you guys have to say in the comments. Have a good one. Take care, everybody. Bye.